Coming up on this episode of Disneyland Weekly, it's a hot one out there, tech issues.
Pixar promenade information, a bunch of little changes, and more. Disneyland Weekly starts now.
This is Disneyland Weekly.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Disneyland Weekly for the week of July 11th, 2018. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. So as you all know, Disneyland officially opened on July 17th, 1955, so it's a really important month for the resort. But most of you probably don't know that both Teg and I share a birthday month with Disneyland. So to celebrate all three birthdays, we're offering a special bonus to anyone that becomes a patron during the month of July. Doesn't matter if you join at the general admission or Club 33 level, we want to celebrate with you.
To find out how to help support the show, go to DisneylandWeekly.com/support. Just a quick program note that this week's episode is being live streamed to supporters at the cast member level and above. Next week will be the listener feedback episode that should drop towards the end of next week in the normal feed. The week of the 25th will be the second Patreon guest episode, which we'll choose in just a moment. And then the first episode of August, we'll have a very special guest to talk about travel planning for the park. So, if you have any questions about travel planning or anything related to tickets or booking or any of that type of stuff with traveling to the resort, please send us an email. If you're a supporter, you can talk to us in the chat about it. But we basically want to compile a bunch of questions you guys have. And our guest that's going to pop in for that will talk to you to will answer all those questions and kind of talk to us about some traveling stuff. So now we're going to draw our patron out of the hat. And the magic Mickey hat of Destiny.
Yes, drum roll, please. All right. You can all see that I'm not cheating. Really mixing them up good.
Who is it? Who is it?
It's Miss Liz Dodge. Congratulations, Liz.
Congratulations.
So start thinking about your topic if you... Start thinking about your topic. If you are not, this really isn't your thing to be on the show, no hard feelings, no worries. Just let us know and we can pick another name.
Well, now let's get to the news.
Attention, attention, please. Sala speaking. Please check your seat straps, making sure always they are securely fastened. Hello, are you now coming in? Please make sure your seat straps are securely fastened. Go easy, easy, easy! The wheels may be needing a little work.
You seek the treasure of Mara, glittering gold. It is yours. You seek the future. I will lift the curtain of time. It is your destiny. You have chosen wisely. This path leads to timeless youth and beauty.
This past weekend, temperatures reached 115 degrees at the resort, resulting in a much different experience for the guests willing to brave the heat. Attendance was down and the resort was much easier to navigate. Most of the attractions had little to no wait times. Disney did its best to try to remind visitors to drink plenty of water and even handed out Wild About safety cards featuring Timon and Pumbaa exclaiming, "Don't wait too late to hydrate." Cast members at outdoor carts were given misters and water to help beat the heat. Some of the cast members over in DCA were even allowed to ride Grizzly River Run in costume to help cool down. That's pretty cool.
I think it's really cool. So just the fact that how proactive Disney was with this kind of unexpected heat wave. I think I read somewhere that this like broke a record. It was so hot. So it was just really cool that they kind of went a little bit above and beyond, not only for the guests, but also for the cast members. I'm really surprised, really, really surprised that they let the cast members go in full costume. And when we say full costume, we're not talking about like somebody in the full blown like Mickey Mouse or Donald outfit. This is just, you know, I guess their uniform, in their full uniform down Grizzly River Run. Because I have never gone on that ride and not gotten completely soaked.
Yeah.
So maybe it was the end of their shift or they had a change of clothes. I don't know.
All I know is I know that our job does not allow us to go on water attractions when it's hot out. So it's pretty cool that they were able to.
Yeah, but we also work in an air-conditioned building, so...
That's true. That's true.
Well, and the other thing that, just like personally, so I've gotten really interested in this whole them handing out cards thing. So, of course, I see that there's a new card for this, and I'm instantly jealous. But then I thought of Vern, because when we were there, he was obsessed with that exact... Because these same safety card things are in, you've seen them before, everyone sees them as they're walking into the park, but they're kind of above in the security tent. And so Vern, oh, really? Vern actually last time we were there, of course, took multiple photos of them, because he just loved the Timon and Pumbaa one with don't wait too late to hydrate. So he would have enjoyed a card.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Well, to make matters worse, Disneyland also experienced a server crash over the weekend. Guest relations staff would have to call the attractions to get updated wait times. So guests that had purchased Max passes were being issued handwritten passes during this time, too.
Now, I did see online that actually this resulted in something good happening, which is it kind of went back to what the park was like before FastPass, because they couldn't operate any of them, so everything was just standby only. Well, and a lot of lines were very short.
Yeah, I think it was kind of the perfect storm, really, because this happened when it was so hot. So you already had a lower attendance rate, plus nobody was using the FastPass. So yes, a lot of the wait times, from what I was seeing online, were, I mean, at most 20 minutes.
Now, I was talking, I went, Jacob and I went out to do business stuff today, and one of the things we talked about in the car was about the server issues, because we're tech people, right?
Yeah.
And we talked about FastPass and MaxPass, and he had been to Disney World and experienced FastPass out there, FastPass Plus. And we were talking about how he thought it was a great idea, like we talked about with Pirates, that maybe instead of doing this weird double thing where you have the FastPass and you have standby, just do FastPass and not have standby.
That's true. Yeah.
And then, but I mean, I guess that ends up leaving a lot of people out in the park. I don't know. It's just an interesting idea to talk about. So Robert Niles over at the Orange County Register brings up some good points related to Disney's systems going down this week that includes some other thoughts on technology provided by Disney in the parks. His first point's a good one, especially with all the new apps that Disney has been developing for use in the parks, and that's consistent, always available wireless internet throughout the resort. I know that they have Wi-Fi in mm-hmm. parts of the resort, and you experienced this when you were there, because
yep.
you tried to call in over it, and it was terrible.
Yeah, and that was with me sitting in one spot.
Yeah.
So, and all I did was move. During that call, I moved 30 feet, maybe. I moved from sitting outside of a restaurant to then walking just right onto the patio. Didn't even go into a building. And I listened back to that recording. I can tell exactly when I got up and when I moved.
Yep.
Because the quality of the call definitely changed. And I noticed that there were some times, because I was using the Max Pass one day, and then just the general Disneyland app just to check the wait times and everything. And so some of the times I realized, I was like, oh, cool, I'm on wireless. I'm just going to leave this app up and running so I don't have to wait for it to load each time. And then other times I realized, oh, wait, no, you're on data now. So now you're sucking however much data usage you have. So it was just kind of a pain. It would be nice if it was consistent. I don't know. You're the tech person, not me. But I don't know if it's what the problem is. If it's there's too many people on it, or if the signal's not good enough, or
I think it's
what?
A combination. Because the challenges that I can think of with this particular technology is, first of all, you have to have places to put the access points to, like, send the signal out, right?
Right, yeah.
So a lot of places I feel like it'd be very challenging, like the hub. There's really nothing to attach.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Put it in the partner statue?
You could put it in the lighting fixtures that have the lights for like the parade and stuff.
Yeah.
You could do that. Obviously, inside attractions, like when you're waiting in line to get on Radiator Springs Racers, or if you're in any of the shops, all of those can have wireless. The problem that comes from all of this is they have to buy a lot of access points because they got to cover it a lot. And they only support, you know, so many people. Even if they support hundreds of people on each one, there are thousands of guests in the park.
Right.
So you have to have all of that. Plus, you could have all of those that you want, but then what ends up happening is if everybody is stream, like Facebook live streaming, because there's been a lot of people I've seen on Twitter that'll actually a few of our followers that will tweet at us that they're going to, you know, Periscope the parade or something.
Yeah.
If you're putting that, and even if a fraction of the people are all doing that, you need a big pipe to be able to support all that.
Yeah.
So not only do they have to have all of these access points, but they also have to have a really great fast internet connection, and it's Disney. I think they could just throw money at this and it would be fine. It's just, I just don't think that they've seen, and maybe they will now that they're adding all these other technology things. I just don't know if they've seen the benefit quite yet.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I was going to say, you know, going back on that, that's a lot of work and a lot of time for them to get, and a lot of logistics for them to be able to get, you know, more accessible Wi-Fi throughout the entire park. And really, it's not really benefiting them per se. It's just, you know, kind of an added bonus to the guest. And quite frankly, I'm kind of okay with it not being there, because really, I think we spend too much time on our phones and on technology anyways.
Right.
So I think it's good to kind of disconnect and get transported into the magical world of Disney.
But people are going to be on their cell plans anyway.
I know.
And if they're trying to push more things like, you know, the Disney Experience app, you can buy tickets now. You can upgrade to FastPass. You can see all of your, or MaxPass. You can see all of your photos through PhotoPass on the app. So I think that if they want to start pushing people to the app to upsell on things, they're going to have to invest in some money.
Oh, yeah,
to do
for
that.
Sure. For so. Sure. Well, step right up. The Pixar Promenade features four new whimsical game booths. First up, we have La Luna Star Catcher, which is based off of the Pixar short La Luna. It's a fishing game where guests use magnetic poles to help Grandfather Nano, Papa, and Bambino catch stars. Prizes include plush stars, moon, and even a Bambino. Next is the WALL-E Space Race, which was inspired by WALL-E and Eve's space dance scene. In the game, guests aim their water cannon at a target, which then propels WALL-E and Eve higher and higher. Winners can receive a plush WALL-E, Eve, or Moe. Heimlich's Candy Corn Toss is next. This is a beanbag toss style game where guests are given giant pieces of candy corn to toss into Heimlich's mouth. An audience of bugs cheers you on from the sidelines. Prizes here include plush Heimlich, Flick, Francis, or candy corn. That's plush candy corn, not the food. Last in line, there's a bullseye stallion stampede. The lovable horse from Toy Story races his friends to the finish line. Guests can help their horse run like the wind by rolling rubber balls into holes, sort of similar to skee ball. If your horse is the winner, you can claim a plush Woody, bullseye, or pony as your prize.
Yeah, I think this is a great, like, change up to this whole kind of area of the park. They had some boardwalk games here before, but I definitely think the theming on these are a lot better than they were. And I don't know, it adds to the whole Pixar
thing. I'm excited. I am so going to go play these games, because have you seen the photos online of the plushes that you can win, or the stuffed toys that you can win? Very cute. They look, I mean, maybe they're not the greatest quality. I guess I haven't had one in my hands to know, but they look great. So these games do cost money to go and play. So unfortunately, they're not free, but I'm not sure what the cost is. It said that you were able to buy some sort of game card, like a little credit card, plastic card thing. And then each game costs you however many points. I couldn't find what the conversion was, but yes, just so everyone knows, it does cost money.
Yeah, not free, which is fine. I realized,
but you get a souvenir.
We've talked a lot about La Luna lately, and I was like, what the heck is this?
Oh, I love it.
And I just looked it up, and I realized I never saw Brave in the theater, and it played before Brave, and I looked it up, and I was like, I've never seen this before.
It's good.
Is it? Well, like, what's the... I'm sorry, we're diverting, but what is the story?
So with La Luna, it's this father, grandfather, and this little boy. Bambino's the little boy. And it's kind of a funny, strange concept. They paddle out into the middle of this lake, and they extend this ginormous ladder just straight up. And you're like, what is going on? And so I think the premise of it is that I don't know if they're passing down the tradition and teaching the young son, or if they just all go out and do this. But anyways, they climb up the ladder and they climb up to the moon. Okay. And what they do is they are sweeping all of these old fallen stars, but they're still glowing there on the moon. And then at the end, basically they sweep the stars into the phases of the moon each night.
Oh.
It's cute. You should watch it.
Now I want to see this.
Now that I've spoiled it for you, but you should still watch it.
No, it's still... I'm not somebody that, like, worries about getting spoiled, because, like, you've explained it, but, like, I haven't seen it.
That's true.
So seeing it is different. Well, if you're eagerly awaiting the arrival of Bing Bong Sweet Stuff, then you're in luck. Sort of. candy that will be for sale in this new shop in Pixar Pier is available in Knick Knacks while the store gets finishing touches on the other end of Pixar Pier. So this was supposed to open. It has not opened as of recording this episode today on Tuesday. But you can buy some of the merchandise in Knick Knacks, which I think... is an okay compromise.
You know, I would like to see, I need to find somebody that has found, like, taken photos. So when I went to Knick Knacks, it was just packed full of stuff. I'm trying to figure out where they, like, cleared out a corner to be able to put more stuff, especially, like, I mean, I assume that they have to have some sort of case for the sweets that they've got. They've got different candy apples that they have. It looks like one of them was themed like Bing Bong. It's got his little hat on top of it. And anyways, it just looked really cute. But so, yeah.
It is packed. I mean, from the picture I have here, it's like one corner of the store.
Yeah, but I don't even know where they found that corner. That's what's amazing to me is, like, when I went in there, every inch I felt like had Pixar merchandise. So maybe they sold out of some stuff, which then
I wouldn't be surprised.
Some space.
It's been very popular, the merchandise. So
yeah, well, who knows? If you've been to the park recently, take some photos and show us how this whole setup is, because I really cannot figure it out because there was so much stuff in there.
Yeah.
Kate Whitmack, a 96-year-old former cast member, returned to the Emporium this week after a 23-year absence. Her niece, who works in attractions as a trainer, helped make this reunion a reality. Kay worked in the Emporium from 1955 to 1958, back when it was operated by a separate company from Disneyland. To make her day more special, she got to ride her favorite attraction, It's a Small World, meet with Mickey Mouse, and get a tour of Walt's apartment above the fire station on Main Street.
Can you imagine, at 96 years old, you were one of the first people to work on Main Street in 1955, this amazing new thing, and you're not even directly working for Disneyland, but then you get to go back because your niece works there and she made this special thing happen where you get to meet Mickey. She was also quoted as saying, because this was from the Disney Parks blog, she was quoted as saying, like, based, like, about the fact that everything has expanded, because 23 years she hasn't really seen the expansion, that it makes her happy that she thinks it's cool.
When I first stumbled across this article, it just warmed my heart. I just thought it was so sweet. And the fact that all of the cast members in the Emporium were just, they were thrilled to see her. And, like, it was almost like a celebrity was there. They were just so excited to talk with her and hear about what it was like working with Walt, stopping in and saying hi and just all sorts of stuff. I thought it was so cool and just really neat that I guess being a Disney cast member has kind of been a family tradition to a certain point for them too.
Yeah.
But no, the whole thing, I have goosebumps.
Yeah. Well, the picture of Mickey meeting her, like, she just looks, I mean,
she looks ecstatic.
Not to be morbid, she's 96 years old. She looks like in this moment she could die and she'd be so happy.
Oh, it's awesome. It's so cool.
It is cool.
It's just pure joy on her face.
Well, also on Main Street this week, Starbucks has released new mugs. The new You Are Here mugs are New Orleans Square themed. They feature the Haunted Mansion with pirates and an orange, green, and purple color scheme. I've seen these. They're cool.
They look so cool. Right. I don't know what style of, like, animation, cartoony, whatever it is, but I love it.
Yeah. Although I did agree with Mice Chat posted this, and I do agree with them that with the color scheme and stuff, perhaps they should have waited till more closer to Halloween, because it does kind of go with all the Halloween stuff.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure they'll still be there for Halloween.
Probably.
They'll just see that was actually good marketing on their point, because people are going to buy them just because it's Halloween anyways. So you may as well release them now during the summer when you've got the most guests there.
That's true.
There's going to be a craze, because there's always a craze for everything new in the park. So they're going to, I think they capitalized, actually. If coffee isn't your thing, the Mint Julep Bar is having some work done. To help speed up service times, the space is being remodeled to include two walk-up podium registers outside. So, personally, I've never gone to the Mint Julep Bar, and I have not experienced this, but from what I was seeing online, a lot of people were very excited about this, because to order, you basically had to walk up to this window, and this is exactly how the adorable snowman frosted treat stand is. You walk up to a either glass or plexiglass window, and there's this, like, maybe the size of a softball hole cut out, and you're trying to talk to the person through this tiny little hole. So they were talking about how it would just be so much better to just be able to talk to a person and not have to try and shout your order through this tiny little
opening. Must have changed that, because the last time I was there for the Mint Julep Bar, it was just a window, and you could also order beignets through it, because it was like a little pick up and go little window. And I just remember that it was right at the exit to the Frontierland New Orleans Square train station. So, like, the gates open and you kind of empty out right there.
Sure.
Because you guys ate at the French Market. It's, like, right on the other side of the French Market. So, there's
kind of almost back by where the bathrooms are.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep, on the way to the bathrooms. And so, I just remember that they would always get kind of a line there because people, and their service was not the fastest.
Yeah.
So, I knew that that was always a problem. So, the idea that they're going to put two little walk-up podiums out there, I think, is good because it's like you can order and it'll send like a ticket back and then they can just be pumping.
And then
out
all
food.
The yep, all they can do is just make
one other place if they're going to add stuff like this that I think they should add it because there's also always a line and it's one of my favorite places for Fantasmic is the even remember what it's called.
Yeah,
but it's the place that has the bread bowls next to the Pirates.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have a line when you were there too?
They always do. Yeah, always.
So. Well, Sleeping Beauty's castle received some attention and updates this week. The castle roof toppers, which had previously been damaged from the 60th anniversary overlay, have been reinstalled. There is still some work to do. There's like some dents and some stuff that they need to refurbish. I don't know. It was such a big deal back in the 50th anniversary when they had like, they literally like scaffolded the whole thing and they put up a thing.
Yeah.
And I think it probably made some people upset, but it's been almost 15 years. They probably need a paint job.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's just one of those hard things, I feel, for Disney, the whole Rockin' Hard Place thing. You want to keep the magic alive, but you also want to make sure everything's up to date. And the castle's just such a big, iconic part of it that I could see it being a very difficult decision to actually kind of close it, per se, and obstruct the views of it, too. So, and quite honestly, for me, a lot of this stuff, you don't really notice it unless you're really looking for the imperfections. Then, yes, of course, you're going to find them. But right. it's not dilapidated. It's not like it's falling apart or like there's big chunks of paint or tiles missing from the roof or, you know, anything like that. It's nothing glaringly obvious. Some people think it is. I personally don't know. Maybe I just get swept up. I don't know. Disney also installed large new fence panels at the Small World Parade Gate. The panels are almost identical to the front facade of the attraction and fit in very well with the look of the area. At the attraction itself, the clock tower has been refurbished and fixed. The clock received a facelift, no pun intended, which spruced up the Children of the World Parade, and the numbers inside of the clock have been replaced. I didn't even realize that I did that.
Did what?
The facelift thing. That was a really bad joke.
You know what? That's what you support us for, is the really bad jokes, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty cool. I like the fact that they're finally getting some Small World stuff done. I know that there's still some painting, I think, that has to be done and some additional things around there, but it looks good. I'm glad that they're doing these small little changes that I think, like, overall make a big difference.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, and honestly, when we were there last, waiting in the queue to get onto It's a Small World, it was kind of sad not having the whimsical little clock kind of, you know, tick-tocking, kind of flip-flopping.
And the Children of the World
back
coming
and
out.
Forth. You know, I'm really bad at timing things. I really don't ever. I have to, like, make it a point to try and be there to catch the Children of the World. They don't just ever happen upon it.
Sure.
But it just the noise of the tick-tock, tick-tock, and watching the face kind of, you know, bob back and forth. And of course I have to do it right now because that's just how it goes. But yeah, it really, you know, I don't know, kind of brings that area to life a little bit more, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I like motion, and mm-hmm. that's one of the things I said back when we were talking about Tomorrowland too, is the things with motion just makes it feel alive. Well, there have been a lot of complaints online about the state of the paint job in Toontown, so Disney finally did something about it, but not in a way that people ask for. This week, they painted the cast member gate near Minnie's house red with white polka dots. Very Minnie representative. So the rest of the paint in the land might not look great, but the gate does.
You know, I'm really surprised that they did this. And part of me almost wonders, like, was this some sort of prank or something? Because usually they try really, really hard to make those gates blend in and not stick out like a sore thumb.
I think this goes back to our conversation about the castle and, like, being photogenic. In Disney World, they have this wall. It was purple. And, like, people just love taking pictures in front of it. Yeah. So I think what's something that's kind of out of the way but still kind of matches with everything mm-hmm. that people can take pictures in front of.
Well, and it's like, there's so many of these things popping up around the resort now. It's like the cars that they switch out with different themes in front of Cars Land, plus just the movie poster type things that they have up in Cars Land. Even when Pixar Pier was under construction, the walls that the construction walls that they had covering things up, those became hot new places to get your photos taken. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I walk past those things and don't even really realize and notice them. Apparently, I'm not a good selfie, like, framer, taker person because I just don't even see it. But so many people take these photos and you see them online and they look awesome.
Yeah. Any type of pictures or anything like this where you have, like, a wall where people can take pictures in front of or the castle, that's all free advertisement for Disney.
Oh, yeah.
So this goes back to adding Wi-Fi in the park, like, better Wi-Fi. Spending that money on that is, you know, they could take that from, like, their marketing budget. And it's fine. So I think I think that it'll make that wall really stick out. So I'm not sure. But I think it's a good photo spot.
I don't know. You know, I'm kind of thinking about where it is. I would, again, if you're going to be in the park sometime soon, I would like to see a photo of just like if you're in the middle of Toontown, like the street of Toontown, you know, I guess kind of by where the fountain is. Take a picture of Minnie's house from there. It's obviously, it's a bright, bright red wall with big old polka dots on it. You feel like it'd stick out like a sore thumb, but I feel like that gate's actually tucked back quite a ways. So I'm wondering how in your face it really is if you don't know it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see. Maybe mm-hmm. one of our listeners can go and take a picture and send it to us. So this week, our discussion topic, we're going to start kind of, we've got some ideas floating around for some discussion topics in the future.
Oh, and we have ideas.
Yeah. So this week, though, we're going to do some closer looks. So basically, we're going to pick an attraction and we're just going to kind of talk about it for a good chunk of our discussion. So this week, we're going to start with, I think, our favorite or one of our favorites, at mm-hmm. least. It's my favorite, but
they're all my favorites. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah,
but no, yes, it is one of my tops. All right. So we're kind of doing a different take on our tour around the park series. And what we're going to do is we're just going to focus in on some of the different attractions and just really kind of like peel back the layers and like really kind of learn more about our favorite attractions. I think we're going to kind of start with the bigger attractions, the e-ticket attractions first, and then we'll kind of go back and do some of the smaller ones later. But drum roll, please. Of course, we had to go to the left side of the park. So our first attraction that we're going to be discussing is, do you want to say what it is?
Dun 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 dun. Indiana Jones.
You're laughing at me singing the intro, and there you are.
Which opened on March 3rd, 1995. In fact, if you're watching the live stream, I can point, let me fix this again. I can point behind me here, and I actually have from that summer. I have the 40th anniversary brochure from when that opened. And so that is right here behind me. And I remember, we've talked about this numerous times on the show, I'm sure, that I was there when that summer, and there was lines snaking out of Adventureland down Main Street for this. I'm pretty sure I've told on the podcast before the story of how I was in line and didn't know what to expect and threw up in line, and the little kid going out and saying something to my mom, and my mom knew it was me that threw up in the line. And when this attraction first opened, it was just violent in general. Like it shook you around, and a lot of people went to the hospital and sued because it was too violent for them. What they ended up doing was they really toned down kind of all the different motions and stuff that the attraction makes now. So if you want a really vigorous ride, you got to be in the transport vehicle. You got to be in one of the corners, and then you got to do my trick, which is push your feet up a little bit to get your butt off the seat. And then as you bounce around, you kind of bounce around a little bit more. So what do you got, Teresa?
Oh, I've got so many things.
Well, let's hear some of them.
So the actual ride or the attraction took roughly 7 years between, you know, when they first had the idea or the concept for it, all the way through to, you know, building it. So in this, it cost Disney about $100 million.
At the time, it was the most expensive attraction they'd ever built.
So the other thing I thought was kind of interesting, too, is in some of the original concepts, it was almost supposed to be part of its own, like, it was a center of its own little kind of like miniature Indiana Jones kind of land. It was supposed to have an adventure ride and a little mine cart, the mine cart roller coaster, and portions of the Jungle Cruise and the railroad were kind of going to be intersecting those areas too.
I've seen concept art of this, mm-hmm. and it looked super cool because they had the big room where the skull is and all that stuff. Yeah. They had the train would go through kind of like it goes through Splash Mountain, which I think would be cool.
Oh yeah,
and then. The Jungle Cruise would also kind of come in a little bit, and like the train would be going kind of around all of it.
That'd
and this
be neat.
Kind of harkens back to an attraction that Imagineering kind of thought about before Big Thunder Mountain Railroad came out of, which is it was going to be this huge attraction where all of these different things would work together, and it'd be this hugely expensive, crazy thing. And we ended up getting Big Thunder Mountain Railroad out of it, but the fact that you had all of these different things intertwining really kind of helped advertise the other things. So I know for me, when I ride the Disneyland Railroad and I go through Splash Mountain, I get kind of excited for Splash Mountain. So if you could have the Jungle Cruise and the railroad go through, it's like, wow.
I really wish that they were able to do what they did with Splash Mountain and do that little kind of, I don't know, peel back a layer, I guess, of some of the main attractions like that, because it does. I mean, the railroad goes past a lot of these show buildings. I wish that it did that with more of the attractions. I think it'd be so cool. And that's one of the things that I really wish I could have experienced with the People Mover.
Yeah, because the People Mover was a great example of that, because it went through like everything in Tomorrowland. So definitely, I think it's kind of sad that it didn't get there. But, you know, I still love the attraction as it is anyway. And it's not a mine train ride. It's a mine cart ride. It's this troop transport, mm-hmm. which, fun fact for those of you who don't know this, but I'm pretty sure we've mentioned this on the show before, it's the exact same track layout and ride system as the dinosaur attraction in Animal Kingdom,
yes.
which mm-hmm. opened just a couple years later.
It was interesting because when I went on the dinosaur attraction a few years ago now, I didn't know that they were basically the same thing. I was going through and I was like, God, this is strangely reminiscent. I mean, obviously the ride vehicle is the same. That was apparent. But even the track and everything, it's the same ride. You just swap the dinosaurs out for Indiana Jones or, you know, vice versa.
Well, and they don't have a big open room. All of their things are very... The problem that a lot of people complain about the dinosaur attraction is that it's very dark, mm-hmm. so you can't really see a lot while you're going through it, which I guess makes sense.
I think they do it on purpose.
Yeah, but the other thing, too, is, you know, if you were to go back to prehistoric times and it was nighttime, you wouldn't have lights except for the car, so it kind of makes sense. But I don't know. I just feel like the grandness of the Indiana Jones attraction with that big room that everything is in is just great.
That's where hopefully, fingers crossed, one day we'll be on this ride when it breaks down, and I want to be in that room. That's where I want to be when it breaks down.
I would love to break down on the bridge.
That'd be another good one.
And get walked off of it, because it's in that room. It's the middle of that room.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be another one.
I'll tell you I've got a money-making idea for Disney. They should have annual pass holder nights or something, right? Where you could buy a ticket, and that night they walk you through an attraction. Like, and so they have multiples of these. So, like, they have one for Pirates of the Caribbean. They have one for Indiana Jones. They could do a night where you could ride Space Mountain with the lights on. People would pay for that.
I think they would. They would definitely pay for it. But do you think they would ever do it?
Because that's ruining the magic.
You know, they're kind of peeling it back, and they're dampening the magic. I'm actually going to backtrack a little.
Sure.
So you were talking about how it was very rough, rugged ride when it first came on. So it actually, I found a stat on this. I thought it was kind of interesting. So during the first couple of years of operations, it was so jerky that there were over 300 visitor reported injuries within a 3-year period because of that attraction.
I believe it. It was very rough. I think this will change when Galaxy's Edge opens, or at least I hope it changes when Galaxy's Edge opens. But the Indiana Jones Adventure is the last big e-ticket that Disneyland has seen.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. So, I guess I never really thought of it that way.
One of the reasons that it hardly ever goes down for refurbishment is because it's very popular. So I'm hoping that once Galaxy's Edge opens and they get through that first summer of like craziness, I'm hoping that they take it down for a good like 6 months and really do a thorough work on the whole thing. Because some of the things that I really enjoy about this attraction is in the queue. The queue is long. It was built for hundreds of, you know, thousands of guests, okay? And, of course, it doesn't really get utilized that way because of FastPass and everything else. But there is some great stuff in the queue that like, is there to kind of eat up time. So first of all, back when it opened, AT&T sponsored it, and they had the little Mara cards that, like, you could transcribe all that stuff, which is cool. But I would even back then when the line was long, I wasn't doing that.
So what Tag's talking about is they had, basically there's, like, codes. It was
hieroglyphics.
Kind of, yeah, it was kind of a, yeah, it was a, I don't know, a made-up hieroglyphic. I don't know if it actually was a thing. And so they had these little codes kind of all over. So AT&T had these cards, which, of course, you know how I am about the cards right now. I think this is so cool. It was kind of Indiana Jones' version of Finding Mickey. So it was something interactive that you could do while you were standing in the line. And so it had, like, the code breaker card. So it had the, I don't know, the, what do you call that?
The key.
The key, yeah. It had the key. So there was, and then you could actually call 1-800-CALL-ATT if you knew the code and turn the code in. I don't know if there was a prize or if it was just, yay, you broke the code. But but yeah, it was just something to keep you occupied.
Well, that was one, but if you look throughout the entire queue, there is those hieroglyphics everywhere, and they actually say stuff. Like, if you were to use the code, and, like, you could actually get it, and it says whole paragraphs of stuff. But, so that was one thing they did. The other thing they did is there's lots of, like, places in there. So, for instance, one of the things that I love every time we go through there is there's a section with bamboo that goes up and down, and you could pull on it hard, and it sounds like everything's collapsing.
Yep.
There's the rope that goes into the in the main kind of first spot before you get to the projection, where there's a rope going down into, like, a well, and you pull on that, and you get the guy who sounds like he's falling off the rope or whatever.
You know, when we were there last, it was working, because I had heard that the rope wasn't working, but it was working. And not only did it sound like he was falling, but the rope would actually, like, yank away from you.
Yeah. And that type of stuff is great. That that little stuff is what puts Disney apart from everybody else. The other thing that I remember being in this attraction that I really enjoyed in the queue was, there was a section where you would pull on things, and actually, like, they had the spikes that would actually kind of come down. But I think that was another thing where I think, like, somebody tall or something got hit with it or something. And so, like, they wedge it so it doesn't work anymore. But we are thinking about doing some episodes later on about, like, hidden Mickeys and stuff. That's another one of the ideas we have. But one thing to notice in this queue is somewhere in the queue, if you look up, because it is built on the old Eeyore parking lot, there is an Eeyore parking lot sign up in the stonework if you
and
look for it.
It's hard to find, apparently. I have never been able to find it myself. And from what I've, because I've been reading to try and figure out, you know, where exactly it is, have a better idea, whatever. And actually, there was a lot of cast members that said that worked on the Indiana Jones attraction in the queue that said that they'd have to shine their flashlight up at it, because it's really, really well hidden. So
I agree with that.
That was kind of cool. So kind of going on the queue itself, another kind of hidden cool thing that's actually in the outdoor portion of the queue is the Jeep that's kind of parked out there is an actual movie prop from Raiders of the Lost Ark, which I never knew that until we were going through this. And so Tag and I are actually looking at an image of the Jeep, and there's actually some parts of the Jeep that are still left on from things that the stunt people had to hang on to as they were, you know, bumbling down the road. I don't know, going down the road and, you know, hanging on for your dear life. But yeah, I thought that was really neat, because honestly, I really, with it being a movie prop, I never would have thought that they would have just left it outside like that. But it's Disney. I'm sure they're keeping it up so it's not going to just rot.
Hopefully, for sure.
Right, yeah.
One of the other cool little touches with the queue that I really like is there's a generator outside that is generating the power for the lights throughout the queue. And it kind of spits and sputters and kind of takes its, like, you know, it's definitely having a hard time. And with it going faster or slower or sputtering, the lights actually flicker and get brighter or dimmer based off of all that, which I think is super cool. There's also a lot of really cool effects in this attraction that really, like, you don't notice. So one of the amazing effects that the people all know about is in the Haunted Mansion, there's the Pepper's Ghost thing where is how in the Haunted Mansion it looks like there are ghosts, right? It's the Pepper's Ghost effect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in Indiana Jones, the very first effect that you come across when you get on the attraction is the doors, because it takes you through Earthly Riches, the Fountain of Youth, and I don't remember what the third one was. Oh, sorry. The Fountain of Eternal Youth, the Chamber of Earthly Riches, or the Observatory of the Future.
There you go. Yep.
And one of the cool things about this is obviously there's not three different attraction doors that you go through to experience the attraction. There's only one. But the way that they used to make it so it would look different was the wall would actually move. So there was three doors with one hallway, and the entire room would kind of swivel back and forth to be the first door, the second door, the third door. Unfortunately, with the fact that this attraction has not had a lot of maintenance since it opened, now they have it set to the middle position always, and they have a projection on the door that changes depending on Earthly Riches Chamber of the Future Eternal Youth. And as you go through it, it changes. So that's a good projection thing. Although I think the original effect was cool because I was tricked when I got on there because I was like, I'm on the far left door now. Last time we went on the right door.
I've never been on the far left. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was the first really cool visual effect kind of trick that like kind of messes with your mind if you kind of sort of paying attention
to
it. Yeah. The other one that I think is super cool is the boulder.
Yes.
So the boulder looks like you look like you're in the transport. You look like you are backing up and the boulder is coming towards you. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, the boulder is stationary and the wall moves. Your Jeep stays stationary. So
that's
crazy. If you're on the attraction next time after you've listened to this, and if you look to the side when this is all happening, you can see the ground that the transport is on, and you will see that the entire wall backs up or moves towards you to give this kind of thing, and it makes it look like the ball is coming towards you. Because of the ride system, obviously the transport can't back up.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to stay in one location. But because of the shaking of the hydraulics in the transport and this moving wall, it feels like you are backing up and then you go down this down the embankment to get away from the ball.
That's really cool.
Did you not know that?
I didn't know that, no, because I'm that person that's just so swept up in everything that I'm too busy like staring at the boulder. So now I'm going to have to like force myself out of like the magic for a moment to quick look down, and hopefully it'll be on one of the edges so it's easier to look down.
You're
going to
forget. We're going to go, and I'm going to have to stick.
You're going to be like, Teresa.
Teresa, look, probably. Look over here.
Like, but the boulder, tag the boulder. I've always had this really odd fear. I'm wondering if anyone else has had the same like weird paranoia. I'm always afraid that the animatronic Indy that comes like is hanging from the rope on the ceiling, I'm always afraid it's going to fall. Don't ask me why. The boulder scene. The boulder scene. He's on the
rope.
There's an animatronic Indy on the rope.
Yeah.
And he's like kind of hovering right in front of the cart. For some reason, each time I'm on the ride, I'm always in the front, which is awesome because that's my favorite place to be. But he's kind of like right over top of you practically. I've always had this like just odd, strange paranoia that the animatronic is going to fall. I need to look up. Now that's something I'm going to look up. I want to know how it's suspended like that. Something has to be supporting that animatronic because they're heavy.
Yeah. It's probably anchored up. You know,
Sure it is. Oh, I'm sure it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the last time we were there, he was in pretty rough shape. There was like an inch thick of dust on his hat. He needed some TLC. Poor Indy.
Unfortunately, this attraction, I think, is definitely has not been loved as well as it could have been loved by the Disney cleaning crew and everything.
Yeah.
And then also the other thing I want to mention before you get off of the animatronic is if you look as you go through the attraction, if you kind of look a little close at the Indiana Jones animatronics, they never got Harrison Ford's permission to use his likeness. So his face is there. Like they did him, but then they put a plastic mask kind of over it. So it distorts it enough.
That's why it looks weird.
Yes.
Okay.
Because they've never got his permission to use his likeness in the attraction. So they had already made the molds and done all the faces. So they had to mess with it.
Couldn't they have like gone back and asked him and then taken the funny weird plastic mask thing off and have the true face of this animatronic? I don't know. Maybe they tried and he didn't say it was okay. Anyways, but
Doug in the chat wanted us to make sure that we let everybody know that Tony Baxter, famous Imagineer, Tony Baxter is the man behind this attraction.
Yes, for sure.
And also his wife wants Indy to fall in her lap.
You go, Sarah. Well, since we're going to continue, I'm going to continue on the animatronic train.
Transport.
So the transport, the animatronic transport. The final one of the final Indiana Jones animatronics that you see. It's the one where he's kind of, I don't know, pushing in and like keeping the door closed for you. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, the first Indy, right?
Yes, the first Indy. I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong side of the ride. Yes, one of the first Indies where he's kind of pushing the doors closed. Yep.
Up to the left, off to the left.
Yes, that one. That one. Yeah, because the other one's standing up right on the crashed boulder. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyways, so one of the first animatronics that you see. I thought this was so interesting. So normally an animatronic is, you know, it's a body and they put clothing on the animatronic body. Well, however, to make this one more lifelike, his clothes are actually part of his body. So you cannot change his clothing.
That's interesting.
Isn't that really interesting? I
wonder why they did that.
To make him more lifelike.
Wouldn't you think that it'd be more lifelike to have real clothes on like an animatronic body?
I don't know. Maybe it's however the clothes were falling, or I don't know.
That's really interesting.
I don't know, but yeah.
Huh. Wonders never cease.
We can kind of talk about some different things that are, we're going to back up since we were just on the attraction. Now we're going to go back to the queue. Talk about some other interesting, fun things that are a part of the queue that most people may not recognize or even realize exist. So as you're walking through the line in the queue, you actually go past Indy's office. I think it's actually just after the room that you're kind of held in with the projector. So a lot of people, there's a huge gap in the line at this point. So a lot of people just kind of zoom right past. So most people may not even realize that this room exists. But you actually do walk past Indiana Jones's office. So if you take the time and sit there and look closely, you will actually see a copy of Life magazine with Mickey on the front.
Nice.
I thought that was interesting because I am one of those people that gets too excited and zooms on past.
Yeah.
I know that it's there. I've just never taken the time to really study what's in there.
You know what else is in that room that's kind of cool? So Indy's office is to your right.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the wall to your left that you kind of walk around to go to the next section, there is a what they think is a layout of what the tomb looks like or what the temple looks like.
So
it's cool because it shows the three different paths and all this stuff. So what it like in the imaginary world of Indiana Jones Adventure, what the temple looks like, which I think is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did you know also that there are over 168,000 square feet of hand carved surfaces in the queue?
The queue and the ride, and that just boggles my brain. I mean, that really just boggles my brain, the fact that they're actually hand carved. You forget that those things actually exist and that people actually take the time. And I'm just really impressed that Disney, I'm sure, spent a lot of extra money to have these things hand carved when they could have just been cast. You know, they could have just been molds of stuff and just mass produced, and it could be the same thing or the same design, I guess, over and over and over again. But no, the fact that they actually spent the time and the money, found the talent to do these hand carvings is just unreal.
Yeah. So when you're on the attraction, you go past Indiana Jones holding back, you know, evil in the door, and you go down the steps and you take a turn into that first cave with all the skeletons. There, if you look to your left quickly and kind of back as you go by, there is a Mickey wearing a Mickey hat. Or not a Mickey, a skeleton wearing a Mickey hat.
With the best part about the Mickey, so not only is he wearing the traditional Mickey hat, they actually have it embroidered with his name, which I believe his name is either Bone or Bones.
Bones. I've heard that before. It's Bones. Bones, bones, bones.
So not only does he have the hat, but the fact that it wasn't just some random hat. No, no, no. They specially had this hat made for this little skeleton dude. So cool. The other thing, since we're kind of talking about just facts of the ride and queue, the ride and the queue contain over 2,000 skulls. Don't worry, they are replicas. They are not real ones. But that's the other thing, too. I know there's skulls all over the place, but 2,000? That's crazy.
That is a lot of skulls. That is, it's just amazing how much is in this attraction to, you know, all of the different details. It's no wonder that it cost over $100 million to do. It is just crazy.
You know, I really want to know how much those hand-carved surfaces, how much that part cost.
Right.
Seriously. Now, the other thing, this is totally a tag fact because you get excited about these things.
Oh, probably.
So the attraction itself can accommodate up to 2,400 people per hour if it has not broken down, which this one does have a very long history of breaking down frequently.
Right. A good refurbishment would fix that. 2,400. But the good thing is, see, this is back when Imagineers actually cared about ride capacity.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, you need this. So if you think about the whole design of this, it actually kind of makes sense. So they have, it is the biggest queue of, like, any of the attractions in the park, right? The longest to, like, hold people. So they knew it was going to be popular. And it whips people through, like, thousands, you know, 2,400 people an hour. So, like, I kind of wish that they would get back to, you know, building rides like this and designing rides like this. Yeah. I'm worried that Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is not going to have the capacity like these attractions did, and it's just going to be long waits. I know, like, Pandora, the World of Avatar out in Disney World, I know they have this problem where it's just they don't have enough capacity, and so you get really, really long lines for these attractions. So hopefully Imagineers will be allowed to create circumstances like this in the future, which I think will be more than welcome.
Fingers crossed.
So do we have anything else with the Indiana Jones Adventure?
The only other kind of cool little Easter egg type thing that is in here is there's some famous film nods. Also, I really need to take some time and look and study Mr. Indiana Jones's office, because also on the wall of Indy's office, there's one of the walls is actually made of old crates.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the crates is actually labeled Deliver to Club Obi-Wan, which...
Obi-Wan Kenobi
has, but it's got a double meaning.
It's also in the movie.
Yes, it's in the movie. Yep. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yep.
Takes place in Club Obi-Wan itself, but it's also another very obvious homage to Mr. Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars franchise too.
Yeah,
so I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So do you think it's supposed to be a double entendre type thing, or do you think it's, you know, is it? Do you think they were doing purposely a nod to both things, or did they really just want to do a nod to?
Well, I think in the original movie, Club Obi-Wan was a nod to Star Wars. Yeah, I've actually been on the Temple of Peril in Paris, and it's just a roller coaster. And the what they did there is that it used to just be a standard roller coaster, you go forward, whatever, but they actually changed it when they refurbished it to make it go backwards, so it's a little more thrilling.
Yeah.
So the whole thing's like backwards.
So is the entire ride backwards, or do you go forwards and then halfway through switch?
I think you go backwards the whole time, but don't quote me on that, because I can't remember. You might go forward a little bit and then go backwards, but I think it was all backwards.
That's interesting, though. That's cool.
Yeah, because if they started going forwards and then had to go backwards, I feel like that they'd have to do something different with the track.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So I think it's
the other way. You wouldn't really be able to have other vehicles on the track while that one's doing its thing. So we'll have to look into it.
Are we done? All right. Well, thank you all for going on that journey into the Indiana Jones Adventure with us. And that's it. So we're going to do some more of these with some more different attractions as we go on. We also, like I said, I think we're going to do another tour of the park, but this time we're going to be hunting Hidden Mickeys. So I think we'll, I'm not sure what we're going to do next week yet. I'm not sure what we're going to do next week yet, but we might do another one of these, because we've got a couple other discussion topics we're going to weave in.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll try to keep the tour of Hidden Mickey's kind of in one chunk together, kind of like we did with the just the park tour in the beginning. So, well, as we wrap up, we want to thank all of you for listening each and every week. If you like what you're hearing or you'd like to support the show, you can help us out by becoming a patron. Our patrons get some nice perks, including access to a supporter-only chat with us and fellow Disney park fans, and Disneyland Weekly swag. Also, you could have watched the show getting live streamed tonight. We did go on quite a bit. I know that the actual podcast episode will not be this long, but we've been streaming for an hour and 40 minutes now. So there's a lot of stuff that you don't catch in the podcast that the live stream is kind of interesting to watch. We did go on a couple tangents and won't make it in the show, but it is still entertaining. But you can find out more at DisneylandWeekly.com/support.
Well, if you are in the midst of saving for your next trip to Disneyland and can't support the show monetarily, then you can help us out by sharing Disneyland Weekly on social media or by word of mouth with other Disneyland fans that you may know. If you are going to the park soon and want to be wearing some Disneyland Weekly swag, you can head on over to DisneylandWeekly.com/store to pick some up. Now, the one thing I will mention about the store is we have been getting some feedback from our actual place that we do the store through, that they have some deals and some specials and some discount codes that they will be having. So what we'll try and do is probably post those maybe on our Facebook. So and every Twitter. Time, yep, Facebook and Twitter. So each time that we get one of these new discount codes, we definitely want to share the savings with you guys. So we'll go ahead and post those to our social media pages as well.
Sounds great to me. We love seeing reviews on iTunes. Plus, it helps get our ranking better so more people can find us and join in the community. If you want to join in the conversation, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Disneyland Weekly, on Twitter at DL Weekly, or by sending us an email at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com. Feel free to email, Facebook, or tweet us any questions, feedback, or suggestions you may have about the show.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.